Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Olami 613 in Chicago with a very special live studio audience. Yes, an elevated, holy live studio audience consisting of what we call my Esh Yisrael, my woman of valor. Yes, Suri Garfinkel is our live studio audience now, and I would like to give her a shout out. Why? Well, for many, many, many reasons, but we just finished a Shabbos in the city, and I was doing the calculation. I think we served probably close to 150 meals between Friday night, Saturday, lunch, and the third meal. Actually, if you include the Kiddush, that is four distinct feeding opportunities. It could be well over 150 meals, dear. How do you feel? Was that a...
It was great. We had a great time. We had lots of great people. It was great.
We really had a great time.
Can't wait to do it again in December.
And December and January and February, March. The train is rolling. And thank God. This is exactly why we do it. We do it at Olami 613. We just had incredible people there, packed. And a lot of people actually spent the night downtown in the hotel with us. And it was incredible. We had a minyan, for those curious, actually, a prayer quorum for all of the prayers. And Saturday night was the yahrzeit of one of my grandfathers, my mother's father, Leon Feuer. And it was really a very special moment, I have to tell you, to be able to say Kaddish for my grandfather in a Jewish outreach situation in the middle of downtown Chicago where there's really not a lot of Jewish stuff going on, I think is a tremendous merit for him. And my other grandfather has a yahrzeit coming up actually this Monday night. And so we dedicated the spiritual energy and merit of the Shabbos to both of my grandfathers. My other grandfather was Harry Garfinkel, Herschel Ben Anshel, and may both of their neshamas have an aliyah, their souls maybe will be elevated with all of the merit of the mitzvahs that their grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren are doing. Okay, so here we are, folks. The Torah portion this past week, Chayei Sarah. Now, in Israel, this is a huge, huge Torah portion, weekend, Shabbos, in the city of Hebron. Now, when I first started learning Hebrew and I saw Hebron, I'm like, what's the Chevron station doing over there? But in English, it's Hebron. Okay, we're going to call it Hebron, okay? We got this? So Hebron in Israel is Hebron in Hebrew. Okay, so we're gonna call it Hebron. And this is the Torah portion where Abraham negotiates the purchase of the burial plot in Hebron for his wife, Sarah. And we're going to get into that story. And then after that, we are going to discuss the search for the secret caves below the famous building that is above ground and the tombs of the matriarchs and the patriarchs. So this past Shabbos, thousands and thousands of thousands of Jews travel to Hebron to spend Shabbos. If we could say literally sleeping in the streets is pretty accurate. Thousands of Jews went there, a very celebratory Shabbos each and every year. And so let's get into a little bit of the exciting story. Ha ha ha, Mediterranean Shuk. Yes, this is one of the Torah sources for negotiations. And Abraham gets up off of his morning, and he gets up and he says, I have a job to do, and that is to find an appropriate burial site for Sarah. And he goes and he has his eye on this particular plot of land. And the question is, why? What makes Hebron so special? Well, the rabbis point out, and anyone who's been there, is Hebron is, it's not so easy to plant there because it's very rocky soil, and therefore became classically the city of Jewish burial. And that's a geological reason. But really, the ultimate reason is that that is the tradition where Adam and Eve are buried, Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava are buried in Hebron in this very special cave called the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, the double cave. Now, what does the double cave mean? The double cave is either all of the, it's named the double cave, either for all of the couples that are buried there, Adam and Eve, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, and Yaakov and Leah. Rachel, Rachel, was buried on near Bethlehem, on the road just outside of Jerusalem. And that plays a key role in the future of the Jewish people. As we're heading out to exile, Rachel cries for her children going, leaving to Babylon after the first temple was destroyed. And to this day, people go to the Rachel's tomb and connect with Mama Rachel, as she is called, to be able to cry for them and their prayers to be answered by the Almighty. Now, so that is, those are the reasons why it's called the double cave. And Abraham knew that Adam and Chava were buried there, and he wanted it. So he begins negotiations, and we had an entire class on this this past week at Olami 613, but I'll just give you the highlights. He starts negotiating them, and he wants something called an Ahuzas Kever. He wants something that is not just a burial place. He wants a land trust. He wants it as an eternal purchase, not just a long-term rental, not just I'll buy it for now and we'll get back later, but a permanent purchase. There's different levels of owning things, right? The famous Twin Towers, right? I believe it was Larry Silverman had a 99-year lease on them, right? He didn't own them. He leased them for 99 years. Okay, so he wanted an eternal acquisition of this. And the people kept telling, no, Abraham, you're a prince of God. I'm in our midst. You keep them, take them. And Abraham's like, no, I want the specific owner. I need to talk this out. And the owner of it, Ephron, and this is like the first used car salesman in the Torah. And Ephron says the same thing. Avram, you're such a wonderful person. You take it for free. And Avram, bottom line, did not want to take anything for free. We see before in the War of the Four and Five Kings that he was offered a lot of booty from having won the war. But he absolutely did not want to get enriched or owe anything to any of these basically sleazy characters. And he demands that he pays. And Ephron keeps demanding that he's going to give it to him. And finally, wink, wink, in private, secret, Ephron says, hey, okay, Avraham, what's 400 shekels between friends? Now, so that would be like turning to us and, you know, someone saying, hey, Abe, you know, what's $40 million between friends? Or some ridiculous amount of money. And it says, in fact, that Avraham not only paid the 400 shekels, he made them over lasucher. He made them in what's called, translated as negotiable currency, which was extreme, which basically meant there were certain currencies that were used only locally. And then there was like, I don't know, in the ancient world, there were different levels of currency that were basically accepted everywhere. And so these were accepted everywhere, and they are up to 2,500 times the amount of an ordinary shekel. So he overpaid for this. He overpaid for this in order to guarantee that this would be a permanent, forever situation, and that he and his descendants, i.e. the Jewish people, would own this plot of land and its surrounding area forever and ever and ever and ever. And so imagine, you know, contracts, you know, how long do, you know, what is the oldest contract we have, right? Okay, so maybe the original deed of your house, or, you know, the contracts back a few hundred years. This literally goes back 3,000 800 years of exactly what's in the mortgage. We know exactly the title. We know the discussions that were surrounding it. There is absolutely no question whatsoever that this belongs to the Jewish people. And yet the irony of ironies is that Hebron is one of the most hotly contested land pieces of real estate in all of Israel, and all of the, you know, Arabs, Muslims say that it is theirs, and it is considered an anathema, even on the Israeli left. How? Hebron, you know, these settlers are wreaking havoc by being in Hebron. Okay, it's a discussion what the proper strategy is, but no one can claim anything else but that this is our land 100%. Later on throughout history, I don't want to go through the whole political thing of it, but the land was repurchased later on several times, etc., etc. But we as Jews should be extremely confident that when any newspaper, do they still have those news outlets online, say that, you know, these are stolen lands and Israel's a conquering nation, we say, no, 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 no. Just turn back to Genesis 23 and you will see the entire story of the purchase of Hebron. And now the question is, what is going on with the caves? What is going on with the graves? Would it be amazing if we could go and pray by the grave of Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, and Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah? Wouldn't it be amazing if we could go do that? I mean, Jews do control Israel right now. Why can't we go? So why can't we go is actually a really terrible chapter in our history. General Moshe Dayan had an approach after the Six-Day War in 1967, was that he wanted to mollify, to pacify the Arabs, and he gave them control over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, or the Kotel area, basically, above it, and the Maras HaMachpelah, the whole area of the cave in Hebron. Now, that was a tragic mistake because, obviously, the Muslims do their best not to let us have access to it. It's one of the most ridiculous decisions of trying to be nice and having it come back and bite you. Now, just so everyone knows, the picture on the cover of the podcast is the picture of is literally a live picture of a student group that I took there a few years ago. And the major structure was built by Herod in the times of the first temple. So this site is really known as the site. It's not like one of these, you know, certain sites in Israel, it's not sure where it is. 2,000 years ago, they knew that this was the place in Hebron where the burial place was. Now, Moshe Dayan felt a little bad. He felt a little guilty. So in 1968, he teamed up with one of the heads of the Shin Bet, of this Israel Secret Service, and his name was Yehuda Arbel. He had a daughter named Michal, who was, based on various reports, either 12 or 13 at the time. And what they decided to do is there was just a terror attack in Hebron, and therefore all of the local residents of Hebron, the Muslims, were on a lockdown, which left an opening for them to go and sneak down below into the caves. But there was only one issue. The only known entrance into the lower level beneath the floor. So imagine the floor of the Maras HaMachpelah is way above where the actual burial caves are. So when you go there, you'll see this is where Sarah's tomb is and this and the other. It's not. They don't have any idea. But symbolically, they've marked off different rooms for each of the patriarchs and matriarchs. So they lowered this very brave young girl, Michal Arbel, down the one area that they knew went down below. And that was a pipe with a diameter of 28 centimeters. So this girl was extremely skinny, and they lowered her down. They trained her what to do, how to make a sketch. They went down with a lamp, and she was able to trace and basically outline what she saw down there. She went down there, and it was a long passageway, and then on the other side were steps up, leading to another part of what above it is Isaac's room. And she saw all sorts of artifacts that were down there, and she got in a certain room, and you know, people hadn't been down there in a while. And so she goes down, and she gets to a certain spot where there's a rock, and she can't move it. It's way beyond her, but it seems like maybe there's something on the other side. I saw just now an article that said that there were actually, she went down a couple of times. Up until this research, I thought she had only gone down once. And she comes back up with some pottery shards that were from the first temple, period, and comes back up. And in 1968, that was the last opportunity that the Jewish people had to find out if the caves are really there. Until 1981. And this is where the story gets extremely interesting. In 1981, a group of people living and studying in Hebron were very intrigued by Michal Arbel's journey, that she got to a certain point where there was a rock that they couldn't move anymore. But how in the world were they going to end up with the opportunity to do this? And none of them were as skinny as she was. And so they, based on her story, she said that there was on the opposite end, that she traced exactly how far it was. There were steps leading up to a rock. And that rock is really a different part of the floor of Isaac's room. So one night in Elul, which is the month before Rosh Hashanah, there was a terror attack, and the entire city of Hebron was shut down. And it was customary to pray all night, and they started singing and dancing, and during that time, they took a chisel, and they were able to chisel away the stone that was blocking. They found where the stone was in the floor, and it was with metal bars. They were able to remove it and go down into the cave from the opposite entrance from where Michal Arbel went, and they saw exactly what they had seen, and what she had seen, and they keep searching. They're trying to find the area where that rock was, and they found it. They found it was a series of rocks that were seemingly impenetrable, and then they felt a breeze. They felt a breeze coming through the rocks, which meant that it must not be solved. They must be able to remove them. And at which point they got so excited, they started tearing away at these rocks and were able to clear a passageway down below to a cave beneath the cave in which they were. And at that point, they got chills, because what is the whole area called? It's called Maras HaMachpelah, the double cave. And they realized that they were going and descending to the second part, the lower cave of what this entire area is described at. And they got down there. And at this point, I will just quote what they themselves described as the experience. So we went deep into the cave, and then it became clear. This was indeed Ma'aras HaMachpelah, composed of two caves, one inside the other, of the double shaft tomb type characteristic of the period of the Avos. The first cave was larger, filled with earth almost to the ceiling, and from it, a narrow corridor led to a second, smaller cave. There were bones and pieces of pottery scattered on the floor, which we collected. The sounds of our hearts pounding was audible. No living being had been this close to the Avos, to the patriarchs and the Imahos, the matriarchs, in thousands of years. Each one of us spent some time considering the significance of being here. We tried with all our might to overcome our excitement, seize the rare moment, and focus on our prayers. After all, such an opportunity does not come every day, especially not on the eve of Rosh Hashanah. Hours passed, which felt like minutes. Before dawn, we received a message over our radio. It's almost dawn. You must leave now before the Arabs wake up and discover what happened during the night. We left the cave overwhelmed with excitement and an uplifting, unforgettable experience. Years have passed since then. We have never had another opportunity to return to Maras HaMachpelah, the double cave of our patriarchs and matriarchs. But the experience and memories remain alive in our hearts. And so these Jews were able to verify that this is indeed where our patriarchs and matriarchs are buried. And yet, sadly, we are unable to go and to access them in the most direct way. You know, in the end of the day, the Almighty determines what the Jewish people are ready for and what the Jewish people may not yet be ready to experience. And it could just be that we are not yet ready on the level to have access, direct access, to our avos and imahos, literally within a few feet. But I have to tell you personally that the times that I have gone to Maras HaMachpelah in Hebron, the double cave in Hebron, above where the actual burial plots are, it has been truly inspiring. So God willing, we will take this slightly different Monday motivation today, Torah-based, a little bit archaeological-based, and story-based, to reignite our love for the land of Israel, to reignite our passion that we are this glorious next link in this absolutely incredible 3,800-year chain. Let that sink in as incredible motivation for an awesome week ahead. God bless. Have an amazing week, and we look forward to seeing you again right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.